It's now the Co-Directs Podcast, the hit new podcast from the creators of the Co-Pilots Podcast.
That's us. We did that.
Yay! And we're doing quite well. The first episode of Co-Directs has been released. It's got how many? 13 downloads?
Yeah, something like that. I will check right now.
If you're wondering about how podcast creators get paid through from Acast and Spotify and iTunes, that roughly translates as £1,000 a listen. So we've made, £6,500 each so far, which isn't too bad for a brand new podcast.
Huh? It's on 14 downloads currently.
Oh, right, okay, that's £7,000, so that's £3,500 each.
Yeah.
Just from that.
I'm just out of curiosity, and while we're live,
that doesn't make sense.
I'll just have a gander at Copilot, see how that's doing.
A proper gander. How much money have we made from Copilot? I imagine it's loads.
Copilot's in the last 3 weeks, 100 downloads.
Ah, oh, that's a bit much. It's £100,000.
That's like off 65 on Sunday.
65 downloads in one day.
Yeah, I feel that's like weird. Someone's just downloaded them all.
I mean, fair play. Thanks for doing that. If that was you, I mean, maybe you've not discovered the delights of the Co-Directors podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, back to today's episode. Today's episode, it's a big one. It's a biggie.
Yeah, to be fair, I'd never heard of this guy before.
No, I mean, keep an eye on him. Rising star. I think he'll probably go far.
I mean, to be fair, if his first film came out in 1971 and I haven't heard of him now, he's done. So has Steven Spielberg done anything that I will have seen?
What, of note? Nah, I don't think so. Nothing really jumps to mind, does it?
I'm good with that. That's totally fair.
He's done one or two. If we have to explain to you who Steven Spielberg is, then maybe we are not the podcast for you.
No, I mean, explain to me. Who's Steven Spielberg? I'm just looking at his filmography, and Duel isn't the first one.
Yeah, it's a feature film.
What's his first feature film?
Amblin's a short film he made, and what he named his production company after. Don't worry, I've looked into all this. I've made sure that these are
first. I don't give a shit. Have I heard of any of these? Raiders of the Lost?
Jaws, no. Schindler's List, no. Jurassic Park, no.
Minority Report, can't remember that one.
One of my favourite films that he made is
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
No, fuck that film, it's boring. Hook is brilliant. I love Hook, it's fantastic, and it's like his only film that he hates. And it makes me really sad because I loved it. I actually loved Hook when I was a kid.
I mean, to be fair, I really like, I'm just looking at the list, I like both of the films that came out in 2002. Minority Report and Catch Me If You Can were incredible films.
That's true. Catch Me If You Can, I'm not sure about Minority Report. That's weird. In my head, Minority Report was a 90s film. I don't really know why.
Because it felt very 90s.
E.T., Close Encounters. Yeah, he's been around. He's been around. It's safe to say he's been around. So, his first feature-length film, not short film, which is obviously Amblin, is Duel, which the title of this podcast slightly gives away.
Yes.
You know, he made a shitload of money off Star Wars.
Yeah, because wasn't he producer?
Well, he was.
And didn't he get some of the merchandising rights?
Well, he and George Lucas traded points. So, like, George Lucas characters are. I'm paraphrasing because, Steve made an absolute turkey here with Star Wars. And Steve's like, oh, well, Close Encounters is going to be a big film. They both came out in 1977 about space. Let's trade points. So they traded points on them. So George Lucas got some money from Close Encounters, and Steven Spielberg made like a shit ton off of Star Wars. But Close Encounters is very good. I do really like it. Duel them.
Have you seen Joyride?
No. What's that?
Very similar premise. Came out like I think probably about 40 years after this.
Joyride.
But Joyride is essentially some kids on like a
2001 film.
Like on a cross country trip across America, start getting followed by a trucker, and I can't remember how it ends, but it ends with it very much like a. He was just trying to like, I think he was like return something that like they'd left behind, and they just got super freaked out. But it's quite like the bulk of the film is the same. The ending's a bit different, but
apparently there are there's on the DVD of Joyride there is a 29 minute long alternate ending and four other short endings. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I never understand why like films have like a stupid number of endings.
I understand with like Bandersnatch.
I've actually not seen that yet. Do you know who wrote Joyride?
Richard Madison.
No, it was J.J. Abrams.
Oh, I was thinking of the book thing, like the short story that it's based on.
Oh, right, no, sorry, no, Joyride, I said, not Duel.
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't know that. It's got Paul Walker in it.
I know, I'm looking at
it. I think I watched it because I saw Paul Walker driving in a film and was like, ooh, what's this?
Like, ooh, this will end well.
I was like, ooh, this is Fast and the Furious. Oh, wait, this is different. What's this? I don't understand. You're being chased by a lorry. Cool.
So, yeah, that's basically the story of Duel, isn't it? There's a chap whose name is David Mann, which, actually, that led me to laughing because he's on the phone to someone at some point, and he says, my name's David Mann. And they go, how do you spell that? Fuck, really?
It's got a double N.
Yeah, but as a person with a... For an English person with a European surname, I feel like that David Mann is not that much of a stretch.
I occasionally have to spell my surname because like they ask like because it's like a A-N or E-N, whereas you have to spell it because it's stupid.
Ian.
Like A-double-L-E-N.
I know. I was making a funny Christmas joke.
It's not Christmas anymore.
Thank fuck. Anyway, so yeah, David Mann, he's driving in LA and a truck
like,
just follows him.
From the opening of this, like from like the first 5 minutes, I was like, I'm going to like this film. Because
yeah.
All it was is just the first 5 minutes is just him driving through the city.
I really like that opening shot where and it's just it's, on the front of the car. And it just shows him getting more and more into
and it's
you know,
just ambient
rural.
Sound as well. No, like, score or anything. It's just, like, the ambient, like, you're driving around sounds.
You get the radio, don't you? But he keeps changing the station, which is actually quite a nice touch.
Yeah, and I really like that. And that's, like, a theme throughout the whole film. There are very few points where there is actually, like, a score that isn't coming from either the car or it's just ambient noise.
Would you like me to throw another film student-y word at you for that?
No.
Oh.
I thought you were just going to anyway. I didn't think you'd actually accept my answer.
No, I'm not going to. No. Sound that is occurring within the fiction of the film is called diegetic, and sound that is happening outside of the fiction is non-diegetic. So a score would be an example of non-diegetic noise. The radio is diegetic noise. How clever is that? Yeah. You're welcome.
That degree is paying for itself, yeah.
It's really good being 28 grand in debt.
We really need this podcast to pick up. So the thing,
go
right,
on.
So within like the first 5 minutes, and you see this truck start like harassing him a bit, like they're going a bit back and forth. But the first time it overtook him, do you know what I saw?
What did you see?
Like I saw the license plate on the back and was like, for no reason other than just like. I think when I was driving, I'd sort of keep an eye on license plates. I was like, this cunt might be a problem. And just like try and like keep an image of the like. And then it goes like a big panning shot round the entire truck at like the car height. And then you see all of these different license plates on the front. Like,
oh,
there is.
Fuck,
there are
I've
no,
just realised.
There are no matching license plates on this truck. And I was like, oh, this guy's a serial killer.
Yeah.
And
absolutely,
that, like,
no,
I know,
he definitely
I,
is.
Like, you think you see that in like the first 5 minutes, and I'm like, oh, wait, like, if he turns out to be a serial killer at some point, oh, I'm so smart. But then I was like, oh, okay, cool.
You know how on like different Co-Pilots episodes we've discussed the possibility that you actually might be a psychopath? The fact that you instantly recognised a serial killer.
I just know what to look for. I've done a lot of research. And murders.
Wait,
I mean,
no.
Research. We just call them research.
So So, yeah, so the film is basically entirely a one massive car chase. Something I noticed early doors, like, he drives up behind the truck and all over the truck is the word flammable. And I think that's pretty much just like, it's just saying, this truck is going to blow up at some point.
Yeah, it's essentially just a hint that something's going to be on fire and explode. Though it's not like the at the end, the truck doesn't actually explode.
It burns though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that's because the car explodes. Well, it bursts into flames. I really liked that though, like just really jumping to the end. I liked that it was just kind of like the car's burst into flames because there's a spark and some petrol, but nothing exploded horrifically.
Yeah.
Like you see in a lot of like, I don't know.
Fast and Furious?
Yeah, it's like any film that's just like, I think we know how cars work. They explode when they fall off a cliff. Where in reality, that's pretty much maybe what would happen.
I think you probably got. I did wonder if it might have been a budget thing because the budget was quite low. So I wonder, you know, putting explosives into a prop is probably quite expensive. So
then that's
set
like
fire to it's just easy.
Relatively, because we're what. I can't do maths, but we're like nearly 50 years. Like we're, yeah, like 48 years ago. 450k is probably still quite a good size budget at the time.
That's actually a really good point. That is a good point, actually. I just figured because it's his first film, it would be like, okay, well, look, we'll let you do it, but we're not giving you a massive budget for it. But
yeah,
no, that
I was
that
reading
makes
that
sense.
He like actually like Spielberg actually essentially like auditioned trucks for the role, and he was very specific about that. Like, he liked the Peterbilt 28 something or 281, I think, and because it's
Peterbilt
got like
Peterbilt 351,
and he liked it because it's got these circular eyes that just gave it more of a face. Because the truck is the villain in this.
Yeah, I don't. You know, a lot of people say like you see faces in the front of cars, like because the headlights are the eyes. I genuinely don't ever see that.
Oh, it's like an actual thing. It's like anapomorphic,
yeah,
something.
Yeah, seeing a face where there isn't one. That's how you get a lot of ghost stories.
Yeah,
which,
like,
you know,
it, well, it's essentially it's how people see like shapes in the clouds and stuff as well. It's like,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, for some reason it just doesn't work for me with cars. Like, it works for me with other stuff, like you say clouds and shit, but it just doesn't work with cars. I don't know why. But
yeah, it's just like I think for this it's just like the headlights and the straight like mouth, and then I mean, to be fair, I don't really see faces in a lot of cars. Some cars, like, you're like, that's very obviously just meant to be a face.
Yeah. Like, oh, so when you get the fucking eyelashes on headlights. If you have eyelashes on the headlights of your car, you're a twat.
Do you know what you're getting for your birthday?
Attack of the Clones?
Yeah, Attack of the Clones, but I'm going to stick eyelashes on it.
Fake eyelashes on Anakin.
He's on every character on the front, yeah.
Can I tell you what I think Steven Spielberg is talking about in this film?
How the unknown is terrifying?
I think this film is about gender and masculinity in crisis. And let me follow up on this. So, this is the first note I made. Right at the start of the film, he's listening to the radio and he's tuning in and out of stations. There's bits of music as he drives on through the city. Ends up on a talk station where there's
a talking
chap
about playing meat.
About what?
There was a guy, he was talking, he was like, I play meat. And I'm just like, I don't understand.
Oh, yeah. So you've heard of guys who can play spoons. This guy's playing meat. That really made me laugh. But there's sort of almost an advice show, isn't there? And there's a chap and they're saying, the sense, I've got a question about my senses because my senses says, are you the head of the family? And I don't work and my wife earns the money and I stay home and look after the kids, but I am the man. Am I the head of the family? So that starts making me think about gender and that sort of thing. Obviously,
I just saw that as like a throwaway thing, like what might have actually happened to be on the radio while they were filming.
I absolutely don't think this. I think this is all deliberate because David is then hugely emasculated by. He's got a little red car, and then there's a big fucking truck, and it's just a big dick swinging contest.
Yeah, it's the what like roaming,
compensating for
like roaming salesman versus serial killer.
But it, in so much as I thought it was, at least, you know, he's got a bigger truck, he's got a bigger dick. That literally, that's what I think that's trying to say.
It's meant to be the inverse, that's true. Like, the bigger your car, the smaller your penis.
Yes.
Which would also explain why he's become a serial killer. Like most lorry drivers do. I mean, I don't think I'm stereotyping there. I think it's factual.
I don't know. I feel like Clarkson got into a lot of trouble for saying stuff like that.
Luckily, we don't quite have the reach that Clarkson does.
I don't know, 13 people. That's not too bad. But this is the clincher for me is this bit. He phones his wife while he's in the truck stop. And she's acting all haughty to him and being like, oh. And he's like, are you okay? Like, I'm sorry, you know, about this morning. Sorry about the argument. And it transpires that this argument takes place because the night before they were at a party and his wife says, I just think you could have said something when, I can't remember the guy's name, this
cunty
chap.
Face. We'll call him, yeah, cunty when, face.
When he was behaving inappropriate towards it, and she actually uses the phrase, you know, he's practically raping me, and you just stood there and didn't say anything. So his masculinity is questioned.
And also he like has like that little like, oh, I don't think it was that bad. It's like, no, that's pretty bad, mate.
Exactly. Also,
like the first
exactly.
thing, when she answers the phone, the first thing she says is like, are you okay? Have you had an accident? And he's like, no, I'm fine. And it's just like, pff, give it another hour and a half, mate. You're gonna be like, why don't I just
more
say I had an accident?
But the whole time, while he's on the phone having this, you know, oh no, it's not after, it's shortly after, isn't it? He then goes into the truck stop where he's dressed as a businessman. So that's one sort of American idea of what a man is. And he goes into this truck stop, which is full of guys dressed in cowboy dress, which is another sort of a more macho type of man. So it's just showing the contrast between them there. And he does not fit in. And he even makes the mistake of trying to act tough to the wrong person, who ends up punching him and leaving because he thinks it's the driver of the truck. He gets in and he drives a different truck away, so he's made an absolute fool of himself. I think this film is entirely about masculinity. That is why I got a film degree.
Yeah, because you can take like one little thing and drag it out into like a 20-minute discussion.
This is it. Here we go. He eventually resolves to act aggressively, but it's misplaced. So he punches the wrong guy. He fights the wrong guy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Also,
I thought it was more about like. I didn't see like gender themes, but then I didn't study film for 3 years. I just thought like it's like the unknown thing. Like, in the sense that, like, we've talked about, like, horror films and stuff, either here, mostly probably on Copilots, where we talked about horror films and being like, if you don't see it, it's way worse. So, like, with this, you see the truck, and you never see the driver, which, one, it makes the driver... It makes the driver not necessarily the, like, villain in the story, if you were going for, like, a traditional hero-villain narrative... but it makes the truck the villain, which is why I think it's good that like Steven Spielberg was like, I kind of want something with a face. But I thought it was about that, and then also how you can like something so small can just get wound up and blown way out of proportion, even if one of the parties is a serial killer. But apart from that, because it's like it's such a simple thing that causes this.
Yeah, it does. He does
it's
really,
like
really well demonstrate
David
road rage.
Overtakes a lorry. The lorry overtakes him, and then it's just this back
That's
and forth
catalyst.
Until someone dies, and then. But like, yeah, it's just that sort of showing of like how one tiny, like inconsequential thing, realistically, can just set this off this massive spark. But there's a point where he meets the school bus, that there's almost a point, because there's actually at that point in the film there's been no contact between the truck and the car.
Yeah.
And he's gone in to this bar where he assumes that
the driver is
and like attacks some, like starts squaring up some random man and gets like beaten the shit out of, and everyone's kind of like, and no one else is mentioning the truck. And then he gets to the school bus, and then he's like, oh, why didn't you ask that truck that came by? And at that point I was like, it was a little bit, and I was like, is he just imagining the truck?
Oh man, that would have been so amazing. That
but then,
been
like, but it's
postmodern before postmodernism.
The thing is, at the point that you start to think that as a viewer, well, at least when I did, you get the confirmation from the guy where the truck's at the other end of the tunnel. He's like, "Is that the truck you meant?" And it's like, "Oh, cool, the truck's real. It's not just going fucking crazy."
That's so good, isn't it? When the truck just sort of comes back round into the tunnel. And he's just really creeping in. You're like, he's going to go for you at some point. You just need to get this buzz out of the way.
Well, like, the thing I love, that was almost, for me, like, perfectly timed. That I was like, because I'd been starting to question it, because I was like, oh, well, this is, at that point, you're like half an hour into the film, you're like, why hasn't the truck just run you off the road yet? And it's like, oh, what if it's his imagination? And he's just, like, having some, like, and he's just going to wake up at the end, he's going to be, like, stuck in city traffic and someone beeping at him, and he's like, oh, okay, I'll go. But because then that would have made it like a whole film about like escapism and just how when you die in the dream you wake up in real life. But I just like the affirmation that like the confirmation that like the truck is real at the point that I was starting to think it might not be.
That's a really interesting, that thought didn't even cross my mind. That, oh, what if he's imagining this whole thing and he's just driving like a nut?
Yeah, because like when he first starts, like when he crashes into the fence outside the diner, there's like everyone else seems to be sort of like, oh, looks like you had a bad crash there, mate.
Yeah.
And no one else is like, fucking get the police on the phone, we've got a truck that just flew through here and run someone off the road.
I really like that. That's really good. Oh, the fact that like a couple of people check his car and say, "Oh, it looks like you need a new radiator hose," and then right at the end of the thing that lets me know, I was like, "Fucking radiator!"
as soon as like that when he first pulled into that petrol station, the guy was like, "I think you need a new radiator hose." I was like, "That radiator's going at some point in this film."
I didn't. This is the thing, like I can spot big ideas and shit like this, but I can't. I'm rubbish at spotting little details.
That's the thing, because you come from like a film shooting point, I come at it from like a, I like tropes.
Yeah, a technical
sort. There's always things that are mentioned at the start that come to fruition in like the third act.
Foreshadowing, foreboding, forewarning. Yes. Can I throw another comparison at you that this film reminded me of?
Yeah, is it Euro Truck Simulator?
It is.
The way I play it.
It's from the same director, so it's if you can get what I'm thinking of here, right? So the truck is, I've written 3 points. It's a large lumbering monster.
Oh, that T-Rex
appears and disappears and attacks with no warning, and it's seemingly from out of nowhere. Intermittently is in the film, then disappears almost. I'll give you a clue here. Almost swimming out of sight and coming back.
T-Rex.
Yes.
I think you might be getting at Jaws.
It really reminded me of Jaws.
Except you can watch this without shitting yourself.
I've seen Jaws enough times now that I'm not too scared of it. Also, I don't know if I mentioned it, the Film Reroll podcast, which I think I spoke about last week, actually.
You might have done. I still need to listen to it, it wasn't on Spotify when I was trying to look for it on Spotify.
I gave up. A decent podcast app, man.
Why? I have Spotify, which we're on, so...
Oh, we are. That's true.
It's good. I'm indifferent to other ones. No, the thing, I have other ones. I was looking for it because I had Spotify open at the time anyway.
But yeah, no, this whole film is basically the third act of Jaws when they're on the boat and the shark's attacking the boat. But that's sort of where that comparison starts and finishes. I can't think of anything else that's remotely like it, because there's no beaches to close and there's no little boy that gets eaten. So
yeah. Oh, do you know when like when he's in the bar looking for like the driver?
Yes.
I realised how much I knew about the, like, how, well, not how much, but how little I knew, because as he's looking around, he's like zoning in on this guy playing pool, and I'm like, it's not him, the guy in the truck's not wearing a watch. And I was just like, because he like waves him past once, and it's just like, I was like, oh, he's got a tan line where his watch would be, but he doesn't look like he's wearing one. And then it focuses on this guy, and you can see his watch, and I'm like, it's not him. Fucking leave him alone.
How the fuck do you notice shit like that?
I mean, to be fair, like, I noticed the number plate thing. I don't know. I like little things like that, but I don't know. It's like big themes about masculinity and stuff, because I don't give a shit.
I mean, it's quite a simple narrative, so that, you know, we've managed to get into the whole discussion of gender politics on here. But other than that, it's very Hitchcockian. Also, the very end of the film, what also made me reinforced me thinking, oh, this is Hitchcockian, is the fact that it literally has the strings from Psycho right at the end. You know, the high pitch as the truck goes off the edge of the cliff, or as he's charging towards the car for the last time.
I mean, do you know, there was like one thing about this film that I didn't really rate. Like, as you know, when he has to coast into neutral.
Yes.
Like, where he just dips down into neutral and then he's like going downhill. There are scenes of him going uphill, gaining speed. And I was just like,
that's
not how physics works.
There's also quite a few shots. They used the same shot about three or four times of him driving down the road, looking behind him.
There was also the one of like the truck coming around the corner that they just played at different speeds.
Yeah.
But what's weird is, you know, like, it's just a limitation on filming, at the time.
Technology of the time. And we're so used to faster cuts and faster editing that shots take their time with.
It'll show like a cut of the dash, and it's been like, it's like 80, then it'll cut up and it's like clearly someone driving like 40 miles an hour. But the thing, you just like, I noticed it like the first few times and then just kind of went, cool, he's going at like 80 miles an hour. Like, I don't care. I'm not that, because I also was sort of like aware. There was one shot that I really love. There's like a shot where there's a camera hanging off the side of the car and he like skids, and there's this audible clunk and then a cut. And I was like, that car did not make contact with anything, and it's clearly someone's been sliding around a corner and just ripped a camera off the side of this car. And then they must have got the film and just been like, this is a great shot. It's just the noise, it's just like and then it's just like a fairly quick jump cut. I was like, yeah, I think that was one of my sort of favourite shots of the film.
Yeah.
I think I might, like, to film something like this, how many shots would you need, like, to get all of the different angles of, like, the same sort of stretch of road?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it'd be at least one from every angle.
I mean, I also was thinking, like, you know, how many... Also,
these are going to be, like, fairly older, like, film cameras, aren't they?
Yeah, it's not gonna be like you stick a little GoPro on the front of it. You gotta bolt it on there.
No, I mean, to be fair, I really like it when directors stick GoPro footage into stuff that's been filmed on like the Red 5 cameras. Like, it just flows seamlessly. Like, you can't even tell on an IMAX screen where that GoPro footage is that's filmed in at max 1080p.
Are you thinking very specifically of The Hobbit?
Yes, that fucking barrel scene has ruined the Hobbit trilogy for me. but
yeah.
No, because they would have been fairly sizable cameras, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they'd be junky fuckers.
Which is weird, because they've got all these, like... So I'm guessing I'm getting multiple cars, obviously. And I'm guessing probably just, like, have a car for each shot that you're doing. I'm really getting into like detail that we never normally do.
I mean, I don't know, like, technically I don't know if that would work out as more expensive, because then you've got to buy more cars, but then would you save time by not having to, you know, bolt the car, the camera onto different parts of the car? So
unless you had like, so if you had like, say, like four angles that you're trying to do with the car, you could just have two cars, they reach out to do two different angles.
So while one's off shooting, the other one's getting prepared to
take out the
afternoon or something.
Yeah, you just have... And also, because when it's just a shot of the car, you don't need Dennis Weaver in the car, do you? You just have some cunt driving it.
Oh, here we go. The car was carefully chosen, although three cars were used in the actual production of the movie. So there you go.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never really thought about it, because some shots are from the chase cam. Also, there's some of the shots that I really like are the ones where it's very clearly just attached to, like, something solid attached to, like, the chassis of the car or the truck.
So you have that,
and they're just vibrating.
Yeah.
And it's like, it gives you that sense of, like, oh, fuck, we're really there.
Well, it shows they actually fucking did it, rather than just, you know...
Oh, yeah, like, there was no shadow of a doubt that this was all, like, all practical effects.
Oh, yeah. During the original film, the crew had one truck, so shots of the truck falling off the cliff had to be completed in one take. Can you imagine if something went wrong? You haven't got an ending to your film.
I mean, to be fair, all you're doing is driving a truck off a cliff. You just need to make sure that all the cameras are rolling.
Oh, here we go. For the film's theatrical release, though, two additional trucks were purchased in order to film the additional scenes that were not in the original made-for-television version, so the school bus scene and the railroad crossing.
Ah, that makes sense. Yeah, no, it was... Yeah, no, this... I really like this film. I'm just looking at what, like, references to it have appeared in. Oh, Joyride's mentioned.
What is
it? Joyride. Joyride, yeah.
Grand Theft Auto 5. Euro Truck Simulator 2.
Yeah, I mean, Euro Truck's just a mod. Also, it appeared on the The Incredible Hulk TV show. Apparently Spielberg was not happy about it.
Was it really?
Yeah, I must just been like a background scene or something, but
I Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, there were a thing that I've like touched on it a lot.
Yeah, but yeah, good film. I thought it'll do well, this Spielberg.
Yeah, no, I think he's I think he's dead, right?
I liked it. Our next episode then. Oh, it's a big
one. Oh, in the DVD documentary about this film,
Spielberg
goes out that the fear of the unknown is perhaps the greatest fear of all.
That's
what I said.
That's an H.P. Lovecraft quote.
Yeah, well, Spielberg said it about this film specifically.
Hang on. H.P. Lovecraft: the oldest and strongest emotion of mankind is fear. And the oldest and strongest kind of fear is fear of the unknown. Yeah, that's an H.P. Lovecraft quote.
Yeah. Also, he says that, like, says the effect of not being able to see the driver makes the real villain the truck.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. You don't even think that there's someone driving the truck, do you?
What, like, I'm actually doing is reinforcing the things that I said earlier on.
Yeah.
Because just want to get that.
What you're saying is you and Spielberg are on the same wavelength.
What? Additionally, Spielberg said that multiple license plates on the front bumper of the truck suggest that the truck driver is a serial killer, having run down drivers in other states.
Fucking bang on. Maybe that's what he's doing, the 52 state killer. Oh no, it's 50, isn't it? The 50 state killer. Like, he's trying to kill someone and collect a license plate from every state.
Ugh. Well, I mean, he's fucked that. Because he's dead.
You imagine if this was his last one.
Because you never see the driver, you don't need, like, there's no, and you don't need it, there's no confirmation that he's actually dead. You see some blood dripping in the cab of the, but meh.
It's almost like the truck's bleeding.
Yeah, but then at the same time, like, you don't need an ending, because the end of it is like David being like, yeah, I've won, and then being like, what the fuck am I going to do?
I know, I'll throw stones off this cliff.
Because at that point, he's in control of the narrative of what happened. Like, he can just say, oh, this guy's been trying to run me off the road for, like, 200 miles. I jumped out just in time, and he just, like, rammed it off a cliff. Like, he doesn't say that, essentially, he instigated it. It's his fault. Because he overtook the lorry.
Faster.
Yeah, to be fair, realistically, it is all his fault. Also, the other guy's a serial killer, so, you know. He was gonna get someone. Yeah, I think I've run out of things to say. Apart from that fucking old couple who wouldn't call the police, because they're like, I don't know.
Bastards.
It's just like, and then they're just like, yeah, he's like, that truck's been trying to kill me. Can you just go to the next town and call the police? And they're like, I don't know. I don't think I want to be involved. And it's like, fuck you, lady.
jumps across, kicks her in the face.
You're one of like three women in this film. Like, just go and call the police. Get some more screen time.
Yeah, I like Jewel. Jewel's good.
Yeah, no, it was really good. It's weird because I don't know why, but I always expect to not like things.
Oh, that's a bit of a downbeat way of looking at things.
It's not that. It's just like I don't know. I think because we're so spoiled with like choice in like more recent cinema times that like I don't know. Like, we're just spoiled by special effects essentially. But then I was watching this, I was like, oh man, I love practical effects for like car chases and stuff.
Yeah.
Because you get like, things that you've never bothered to do on like CGI. Like when the truck does that like cuts round that corner. Also, fucking props to the stunt guy who drove this truck. Because some of those, like, coming around that corner at that sort of 40, 50 miles an hour in that truck and just dipping a wheel into the dirt.
Yeah.
But if that had been CGI, you wouldn't have dipped the wheel on the dirt.
Or if they had, it wouldn't be anywhere near as impressive.
Yeah, also, it wouldn't have been... Well, I get the thing, you just wouldn't... I don't think you'd bother doing it because you'd be like, well, he can just make the corner.
Yeah.
It's just that real sort of like slight, I guess, maybe miscalculation, just flinging up that dirt. Just, I think it added to that shot. Okay,
you
now
really
I'm
really like this, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I really did. I think I just like car films as well.
Have you seen The French Connection?
No.
That's got one of the best car chases in it because
is that the one that's just through Paris?
No, it's in New York, and the guy Popeye Doyle, Gene Hackman plays Popeye Doyle, this detective, and he's following the train that goes above the road, you know, in like GTA 4, the bit where you start off and there's like the train that runs over the road and it's like,
yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, yeah, he's following a train, but he's driving. When they filmed it, they didn't have permission to do it, so he rams into a couple of cars, and he did it for real. And these people had no idea they were filming a car chase.
Jesus.
It's fucking brilliant. It's a really, really amazing sequence. Good film as well, French Connection. But yeah, Jules,
I'll have to check it out.
Our next episode, it's a big one. It's a big one for me because I'm a little bit obsessed with at least one of this guy's films. We're doing Christopher Nolan.
Oh, didn't he do something I've seen?
The Prestige, the best film.
I was thinking of Batman.
Yeah, that too. But no, The Prestige. I'm a bit obsessed with The Prestige. I love it. It's really, really.
Yeah, it's
really
weird. I get occasionally get confused between Christian Bale and Christopher Nolan, and I'm like, because I just associate both of them with Batman.
Yeah. Of course.
In case I'd be like, oh, didn't Christopher Nolan do American Psycho?
I love the bit where he hits the guy with the axe.
Yeah, no, it's weird to see a director just doing that in the behind the scenes. just straight up just murdering people, it's fine.
It's Following by Christopher Nolan, which actually is only just feature length. It's 68 minutes. And looking at Amazon, I wonder if we're going to struggle to get a copy of this. So it might actually be Memento. But we'll see what we can do. But yeah, so this has been fun. We will see you, not see you, but you will hear us next time.
Yes.
For Chris Nolan.
I will be here.
I fucking hope so, because I'm not talking to myself for half an hour, 40 minutes.
Oh, it's fine. I found The Following on YouTube.
Sweet. Oh, wait, no, not The Following. It's just Following.
No, it's called Following. It's Following. D. Christopher Nolan, 1990.
Amazing.
I wonder. What language is it in?
If it's D, that'll be Italian.
Yeah. Oh, it's all. I hope the film's like that. Okay, yeah, fine. Bye.
We'll find a legitimate source for the film.
Oh, yeah, we will. I'm sure you can just buy it on YouTube. It's fine. Yep.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Bye.